expressed, and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
The Gathering. The supernatural world can be a dark, intimidating, and scary place. We gather to shine light on the mysterious and misunderstood aspects of the paranormal world. We bring to the table years of experience as mediums, healing channels, and paranormal investigators.
We share true stories from our experiences to dispel fear where we can and help you discover the amazing layers that make up the paranormal world. You are invited to gather around the metaphysical table with us and discuss the worlds of the unseen on the Gathering Radio Show.
Well, it is Tuesday evening, and this is the Gathering Radio Show. I am Stephanie.
And this is Heidi, and we're so happy to be here back on the Para-X Network. Another fine Tuesday evening.
Oh, yes, it's beautiful here.
Tuesday evening.
Mm-hmm. 70s, first time since October. This is awesome.
Yeah. In Minnesota in April.
And Seriously. It's a full moon tonight.
It is. It's crazy full moon. Super full pink moon.
I know. Tonight. How about that? How about that? Isn't that fun? Yes.
It's supposed to be. I mean, this is what I read. I'm not sure if it's accurate, but it's supposed to be the biggest of the supermoons this year.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh.
So the biggest of the supermoons is tonight, and it's the full pink moon. That's the name, one of the names for April's full moon. So,
yeah.
So kind of fun. And just... Like, I think the sunshine and the, you know, just the warm gets us all a little bit giddy, you know, in a good way. I hope it's getting people giddy. If we can get something that'll get us a little giddy, maybe the sunshine and good energy will help, because there's other things that are just not making us giddy right now. So anything we can get.
There are. Yeah. But, you know, we couldn't have a more perfect night than a full moon for our guest tonight, Heidi. Can I just
know.
Say it?
I know, right? I'm excited. Yeah.
No.
Very excited.
So with that, we should probably just jump right in and not worry about our stuff, because we're going to probably fill up this whole hour with awesome stuff from our guests. So I want to welcome Peggy Callahan. She's our guest on tonight. Welcome, Peggy.
Oh, I'm so delighted to be here.
Yay. And Peggy is with the Wildlife Science Center here in Stacy, Minnesota, and you are the co-founder, correct?
Correct.
Great. So we have been just wanting to get, we've had some groups on our show in the past where, you know, we talk about, and I mentioned to you that when we were preparing for the show, we talk about spirit animals on the show, because this is definitely a metaphysical show. We're talking around a metaphysical table, and we talk about spirits and paranormal and all these cool things, but spirit animals come up a lot in our show, right, Steph? I mean, we talk about animals just in general. We love animals.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
And how important they are in for everything. I can't even say one thing. They're just so important for every reason. And, you know, to bring real animals into the mix is part of it, because they can also be spirit animals. Spirit animals just aren't in energy form. They're in physical form too.
Yes.
And so anytime, you know, we want to start bringing awareness to people who are working with animals or saving animals or, you know, doing amazing things like your group is doing, to bring awareness to maybe get more people to think about how important they are for everything on our planet. So we're super happy to have you here.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me.
Absolutely. So we would love to, if you could start with talking about how the Wildlife Science Center came to be.
Well, at the risk of going too far back in history, I don't remember when my obsession, it's an obsession with wolves began. I was a child, and I read every book that was available to me, and I actually wrote to my first wolf biologist when I was 8 years old and told him that I was concerned about the welfare of the wolf in Minnesota, and he replied to me, which mattered. And so I held on to that letter, and I went on to study science in college, and I wrote to him when I was graduating and said, I have this copy of your letter that you wrote me when I was 8 that said I could, in fact, study wolves when I grew up. And he invited me to join a small, unknown group of wolves that were being used to understand wolves in the wild. And it was on state land, and no one knew about it. And I joined that group. And for 5 years, I worked for the federal government, learning as much as I could. And it was really, I mean, there was a tremendous amount of information generated. And one of the more important pieces is that there were a tremendous number of people that came through our facility that would go on and make hugely impactful changes for wolves. The red wolf reintroduction people, the Mexican wolf reintroduction people, the Yellowstone reintroduction people, the people that were on the ground putting wolves back in the ecosystem for the first time, all came through that organization. And then, like oftentimes happens, the federal funding crashed, and I got the word in 1990 that I was to euthanize the 40 wolves that were under my care.
Oh, my gosh.
As you, yeah, right. That was 40? My reaction. And I,
no way.
40. 40,
that's
yeah. And the original colony was made up of wolves that should have been euthanized by law in the wild for eating things they were not supposed to eat. Livestock and dogs. Mm-hmm. And so the man who was my coworker has become my husband and co-founder. And we gave everything up. We gave everything up to create a nonprofit. And we just threw caution to the wind, and we shamed or begged or whatever the state to let us stay. It was unprecedented to have a nonprofit on state land, and we built it, and the facility was in disarray because it was built in 1976. And if you can all think about what Como Zoo looked like in the early days, or any zoo, it was okay for us to look at lions and tigers and wolves in tiny enclosures. That was what we thought was okay. And we've learned so much. And that was the original facility. They were in 6x20-foot dog kennels. The very first thing, I went and got a job. My husband got a job because we couldn't support ourselves. Imagine being federal employees that all of a sudden went from having all the support to nothing. Mm-hmm. And we had to create it. So I went and worked at the Minnesota Zoo for 3 years. And my husband worked at a vet clinic. And we dedicated all of our funding to building enclosures that were humane and comfortable for the wolves. And that's where it blossomed from there. And we opened our doors. One of my fantasies is to get people to understand what wolves do. The good, the bad, and the ugly. I mean, and I don't like the word bad. One of my favorite terms from Jurassic Park was when he said, they do what they do. It isn't an evil thing. It isn't a bad thing. Wolves do what they do. There's no icky motive. Only humans have icky motives. So it's one of those things that was very powerful for me. So we created an education program and opened our doors in 1994. And we have welcomed thousands and thousands of children, K-12, college, and beyond to our program since then. And we have continued the ethic of training biologists that are going to go into the field in the safe, humane, ethical handling of animals that they are going to catch for reintroduction purposes for things like that. So that's kind of the nutshell version. Trust me, there's way more information, but...
So these, the 40 wolves that you were supposed to put down, is those are the wolves that you started with then. So you didn't have to put them down. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Okay. Because we have had people in the chat room like, wait a minute, what happened with the wolves? They didn't have to put them down, did they?
Yeah.
So no, you didn't put them
down. This is the original hell no, we won't go. And I don't know why they thought I'd go to the press. Why would they think I would go to the press? I don't know. But yeah, and at the time, the political climate was such that there was no way the world would have tolerated that. So I think the state let us stay because they did not think we would survive. That's my opinion. So, and we did, despite them.
Wow.
Awesome.
What a great story. Thank you.
Yeah, it is really, that's such dedication and passion.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Well, thank you. I've heard it called other things, but there is no question. These animals deserve a chance to, let me just tell you a story of one particular wolf. She was radio collared in 1983, and she was a three-legged gal, obviously had lost her leg in some kind of trap. And she, for 4 years, the gentleman that caught her and put a radio collar, was like, I don't know if she's going to live. She's missing this leg. But not only did she thrive, she was the alpha female, it turns out.
Oh.
And continued to be the alpha female for 4 more years. She's just I love these badass girls. and she returned to her pack, and 4 more years, she raised pups. So at the age of 7, which astonishingly is old for wolves in the wild, which is appalling because, you know, they can live to be very old if they are not killed by people or wolves. She was teaching her puppies how to eat sled dogs off of chains in northern Minnesota. And it's one of those things. I mean, look, there were mushers that learned the lesson very early on. You don't stake dogs out on chains and expect them to survive when wolves are recovering in northern Minnesota.
Yeah.
So she was arrested and brought to us in 1987, and she lived to be 21 years old.
Wow!
I love it.
Wow.
She was amazing. And one of the hardest things for me was that she moved here and lived in a 6x20 foot cement floor kennel. And when we finally built an earth floor enclosure that was natural with trees and woods and places she could hide, I bawled. I absolutely cried my eyeballs out. And she, everything changed. She became, she got her confidence back. She started kind of rushing me, which was fantastic. I mean, she had every reason to be angry. And she started, one of the things I do is I bring dogs to work because it gives the wolves something to hope they can catch. And the dogs love it. And so they chase each other. And whenever I have orphaned wolves, I use dogs to raise them, which makes more sense than having a human raise them.
Mm-hmm.
And so she hunted dogs because she knew what they tasted like. You could sense the joy, and she was so excited, and she lived for 21 years. My gosh.
That's so cool.
Wow. That's cool.
That's an awesome job. Thank you so much.
So we have a question from the chat room for you, Peggy.
Yeah.
Kat in the chat room is asking, do you think that all wolves who've been hand-raised or kept as pets, can they never be returned to the wild?
Never.
Yeah.
Never. The single solitary thing that wolves depend on to survive is fear of humans. And unfortunately, even wolves that are not hand-raised in the wild, if they live in areas with high human populations, they sometimes develop a certain tolerance for them, and if they don't seem afraid, they're killed. Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because of human danger. Mm-hmm. So, absolutely not. Absolutely not. It would be a certain death sentence for them.
Because they're not afraid.
And then, you know, Yeah, no, absolutely. And then there's the scientist in me. What's the origin of the wolf? In captive populations, it's very rare for people to actually get access to wild wolves. The wolves that I have at a wildlife science center, most of the wolves come from the wild of northern British Columbia from government agencies. That's because they're removing, this is current day. I mean, back in the day, it was from Minnesota, but they were removed because of reducing population efforts. So if I were to release those guys in Minnesota, they wouldn't even be the same kind of wolf native to the area.
Right.
So I think I'm about to get interrupted.
Oh.
I can only guess by what.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's fascinating.
So can you hear them at all?
Yeah, I can hear.
You want me to walk closer?
Yeah, okay. Walk closer.
I'll walk closer, yeah.
So how many wolves do you have there now?
100.
Oh, my goodness. 100. Holy cow.
Oh, hang on. I forgot my phone. That includes Mexican gray wolves that are part of a national effort to recover, international effort to recover a population that was very nearly extirpated by humans. I mean, it's always the story, isn't it? That people do the damage.
Yeah.
And we also have red wolves that were also very nearly extirpated. So both of those species depend exclusively on captive breeding to survive and for reintroduction.
Wow.
There were 7 Mexican gray wolves alive in 1979.
7? Oh. Wow.
That's
yeah. 5 in the southern U.S. and 2 in northern Mexico.
Oh, so, my gosh. So how many are there now?
So, actually was a fairly... Oh, here, let me...
I can hear the wolves.
You know what? I'm gonna see if I.
Oh my god! Oh. They are singing like mad to us tonight. Might have something to do with that full moon, Heidi.
Oh, right. Oh my gosh! Oh, that's so cool.
The moon is beautiful, guys.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. They sound magical. It is so cool.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
So we have let's see here, Karen. Oh, there they go. So cool. So Karen in the chat room is asking how you feed them.
How do I feed them?
Yeah.
Well, some folks tragedy is my benefit. In the 7 county metro area, there are thousands upon thousands of deer hit by cars, and there is nowhere to dispose of them.
Mm-hmm.
So we get them, and we'll take them in any state. So we dispose of the ones that are not feedable, and we feed our wolves a completely natural diet, which is phenomenal.
Oh, that is so good.
And oh, fantastic. So, you know, and it makes people feel so much better that there's actually I use for these animals.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, that's so good. That's good to know. That's really good to know that they're eating, you know, like that, what they would if they were in the wild versus,
right.
You know, kibble from arena or something, you know?
No. In fact, we worked with Harvard and looked at a study. Microbiome is kind of the latest interesting thing looking at, I don't know if you guys are dog people, but I have a second nonprofit, and I run a sanctuary for dogs that fail adoption, and it's heartbreaking work. They are bite cases, and if I don't take them, they die because they've been designated as potentially dangerous or something. So one of the things that we look at is what is the optimum food for these guys because we want to give them the best. So Harvard asked us to look at comparing wolves and dogs and what their guts tell us about how they handle raw versus kibble.
Mm-hmm.
So we did. We compared 10 dogs and 10 wolves, and it turns out that the dogs are able to switch between dry and raw without any problem. The wolves are not. The wolves cannot switch from raw to dry. So whatever we have done, we've modified the dog enough that they are able to deal with some of this dry stuff. But it tells you also that they can deal with the raw, which is you know, it's their ancestor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
That is.
So that's, I could sit and just listen to this for, I'm listening to the animals too in the background. It's so cool.
Yeah, it is so cool. I know, right? It's just such a phenomenal thing to have on a full moon. Can I just say this is just so
right?
cool.
So we have another.
We have a couple
of questions in the chat room.
Yeah.
Right? Karen had another one. She was asking how you, if you can talk about how wolves contribute to the ecosystem.
Well, all we need to do is look at the impact that they had on Yellowstone National Park. Mm-hmm. We trained the Yellowstone team in 1994 on how do you capture and safely anesthetize a wolf. And what the wolves have done is restore the impact of a predator. And what they have found is that a predator coming back to a system where the top predator there were grizzly bears and coyotes, which don't have the same impact. The wolves moved back in. Elk that had the free run of the place felt uncomfortable in areas that they might be in danger, so they began to herd up more rather than spread out like cattle. And the riparian areas begin to recover. So you have rivers and streams that begin to recover. You have fewer elk because it impacts the population. You have fewer coyotes. Wolves eliminated 25% of the coyote population, which changed the small mammal population, which meant there were more birds of prey and diverse species of birds of prey. And the riparian communities encouraged beaver populations, which had been pretty much absent from the park. So then you have beaver changing the river systems and making dams and ponds. So it was what we call a trophic cascade. It was an amazing science experiment that was unanticipated. We really just thought wolves were going back out there. And one of the amazing benefits was this whole process of restoring a balance. And it's been stunning. Now, one of the things that's beautiful and sad about a national park like that is that you get to watch wolves do what wolves do. Outside of the park, it's a completely different conversation. So it's one of the things that we will always face, that in these parks, it's a fantasy land for wolves. We will never provide that for wolves in the whole country. But mm-hmm. it's been an amazing classroom.
Wow. So they're essential, just like all the animals. They have their role
that they play.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they're called a keystone species. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. They're called a keystone species for a reason. They matter in a way. And what's interesting is they hunt in packs because they're just not efficient at catching things. Mm-hmm. They only are successful about 6% of the time. So it's one of the things that is difficult for me to swallow as someone that works with wolves is the incredible animosity that I hear from folks that hunt deer. It is the most absolutely non-issue is that mm-hmm. wolves are not going to eliminate their prey base, mm-hmm. period.
No.
They just aren't. And so all you need to do is sit down with a group of scientific papers and I can point you in the direction. It is not going to happen. And what's different is that if you hunt in southern Minnesota, where deer have not for many years been pursued by wolves, they're a different animal. They're mm-hmm. not as fearful. If you hunt in northern Minnesota, where they are pursued by wolves, you have to be more stealthy. And I guess that's not what folks want to do.
Well, no. They want the easy ones, right? They don't want to have to work for things.
Yeah, it's
goodness.
Actually not
are
shopping.
You kidding me?
Yeah, it's not a drive-through, guys. That's why they call it hunting.
Exactly. Oh.
And, you know, in the interest of full disclosure, I hunt for my meat. I do not buy it unless I buy it. I have found an amazing farm that does butcher on site. I am thrilled. Their animals know no fear. They are led into a stall and they are butchered. It is amazing. And you know, I it is, I am completely carnivorous, and I have finally found the ethical way for me to pursue meat. I hunt on my own, and I miss so much, and then I have found this amazing farm. So that's, you know, in the interest of full disclosure, I am absolutely pure wolf.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Cool. Well, they've rubbed off on you over these years, right?
Yes, they have.
Well, serious, you know?
Yep. And the other piece, I have to be honest, I do eat roadkill.
Oh, you do?
So. Oh, well,
there's a lot of it. You know what? I really love that you guys take out all the roadkill because, oh my gosh, there's so much out there.
I know.
Well, here's the thing. If you get them, how do you know if the deer is okay to eat? How long has it been there? You know, how do you know if it's good for you to eat or the wolves, either one of you?
Nature tells you that. If you open your fridge, do you know if your broccoli is left over, is too old?
Yeah.
Yes, you know.
Yeah,
it's not
true.
It's not difficult.
Yeah. It doesn't smell
and
right.
What would kill you is to know how long, if you are a meat eater, it took from the hamburger to the slaughterhouse to get to your plate. It's way longer than a roadkill.
Right.
That's so true. That's true. When you think about it that way.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's like weeks.
Oh.
I mean, it's really, it's staggering. Yeah.
Oh.
So and my father was a cardiologist and he was all about game. Although he was not a hunter, but he was all about game because it was healthy meat. No fat in these mm-hmm. animals. And so, mm-hmm. So roadkill's been mine because I'm really not that good at killing animals. I just love the roadkill. So.
Wow.
Wow.
Cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
Thinking about it, I'm processing that.
I know.
So I'm wondering if, because we have a few minutes before we have to take a commercial break, but could you just share with our listeners all the animals that you have on your property, like all the animals that you care for? Give us the list.
Sure. And cut me off because, so I have 4 mountain lions, all rescues. Everything other than wolves are pure out-and-out rescues. 9 black bears, a lynx, 2 bobcats, multiple red fox, gray fox, coyotes, raccoons, skunk, a porcupine, and 10 birds of prey.
Wow. Very cool.
I love
and
the
100
porcupine.
Wolves.
Yeah, and 100
and,
wolves.
And 100 wolves. Oh, yeah. Oh, I forgot the wolves. Yes.
Oh,
those are the ones
that
are chatting in the background.
I love it.
It sounded like the 12 Days of Christmas.
Yeah.
You've got, you know, 100 wolves a howling, 10 bears a whatever. You know, it's like, oh, my gosh, that's cool. That's awesome.
It is so awesome. But, boy, do you have your hands full. My goodness, that is just a ton.
I do.
Gosh.
And maybe when we come back, we can talk about the impact that COVID is having on so many. And I feel so guilty even mentioning the impact it has on me because I know there are people that their entire livelihood is going away. But I do need to say something on behalf of these guys. So.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yep. We can jump into that when we come back.
Yeah, so we are going to take our commercial break, and we will be back in 2 minutes. This is the Gathering Radio Show on the Para-X Radio Network.
Hey, this is Barry Fitzgerald from GHI, and you're listening to the Para-X Radio Network.
It is the secret of the world that all things subsist and do not die, but only retire a little from sight and afterwards return again. Nothing is dead. People find themselves dead and endure the mock funerals and mournful obituaries. And there they stand, looking out the window, sound and will, in some new and strange disguise. This secret must be told to the world, and they must tell it. Because they're not dead. We know this, and we'll prove it. So join Mike and Dave every Monday night at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central for the Odyssey Files. Only on Para-X.
Are listening to Para-X.
Hey, Johnny, what's shaking?
Oh, just getting ready for this week's show. It's going to be another far-out adventure on He Said, She Said, the Cryptid Show. What happens when you get two cryptid researchers together, one from Minnesota and one from Cryptovania?
I know. It's so much fun, and it's every week, and we get to have fun and talk to different people. And
we don't always agree on everything.
We might even disagree about a thing or two. Oh, my.
One never knows. It's been known to happen before.
And that is the beauty of He Said, She Said, the Cryptid Show on Sunday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern on the Para X Radio Network.
That was money in the bank.
Welcome back to the gathering here on the Para X Network. We have Peggy Callahan joining us tonight, who has hundreds of animals with her from the Wildlife Science Center, and we've been having a really fascinating conversation. Peggy and the animals have contributed to our show tonight, which is really cool.
So cool. Yes. So,
thank you, Peggy, for being here.
Yeah.
Delighted to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
So we have just a bunch of questions and comments on the in the chat room, but one of them is Karen has been to your facility many times, and she's asking, do you have coy wolves by chance?
It's such a good question. So one of the things that biologists in the area struggle with is the term coy wolves, because what we don't have definitively is the genetics that said these guys are coyote wolf mixes. They are most definitely bigger than coyotes, smaller than wolves, and they're in this whole overlap area. And they are, trust me, I want them. I want these animals here at some point.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting conversation. And if anyone's interested, I cannot speak to the genetics. I'm just not that smart. But there is the best university. It's Trent University in Ontario. And they have awesome information. And the professor's name is Brent Patterson. And he is the go-to guy. He has all sorts of grad students that have done this work. So I would ask him about coy wolves, and you will get an opinion because he does not like the term. And it's interesting because I think what happens is when you say it's a coy wolf, people think it's 50-50. And that's not the situation. Hybridization is a survival technique for animals over generations and generations. And so when you get to these situations where you've got fringe elements of animals and there are a few of their own species, you can't find the one you love the one you're with, and you end up hybridizing. And we now have, unfortunately because of climate change, we have grizzly bears, polar bears and grizzly bears, and hunters have actually shot second-generation fizzly bears.
Really?
They are, yes, they are, yes. And if you can't survive, you got to do something. So breeding is the option. And it's, trust me, I you have no idea how many days I sob about how warm it is today. This is Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
This should be bitter cold. I should be cold. I love winter. Winter is what keeps parasites and all kinds of things at bay and keeps our animals safe from internal things. And so this is a devastating thing, but in desperation, animals do what they do. They breed with what they can breed with. So it is what it is.
Wow. So that's what a coy wolf is. I didn't know. I hadn't
heard
that.
Yes, a coy wolf is not a 50-50. Yeah, it's a long-term hybridization. And again, not verified completely by DNA, but it is not. And what's interesting is that these animals, 65, 70 pounds, which the trapping record in Minnesota is 45 pounds. They just aren't, coyotes don't get that big. So we have these animals, and then there was a country singer that was killed by them in Ontario by a group of them. And they were, 65, 70 pounds. They aren't fearful in the way that a wolf is. necessarily. So it's an interesting conversation. But to describe them as koi wolves is a, and unfortunately that language gets thrown around, and I totally get why our listeners are thinking that way. It, we need to step back and recognize that this is generation after generation of hybridization that gradually leads to these increases in size.
Wow. Just fascinating. This is such a good conversation. This is amazing.
Really interesting.
Oh, you guys are awesome. Thank you.
You have bears. You said you had how many bears? Four?
We do.
And they're awake now, or do they hibernate like we think they do over the winter? Someone was, in the chat room was asking.
They hibernate after they've been rescued. Their first winter, they never hibernate. So, in fact, this winter we had some heartbreaking bears that we rescued. They're both 19 and 20. Looks like brother sister, and they were at a roadside zoo that lost their quote unquote custody. And when we went to get them, first of all, both of them are overweight. And then what broke my heart the most is that both of them have had all of their claws and all of their teeth surgically removed. Surgically.
That
so there's some veterinarian that was complacent. Oh, it's disgusting.
That's just horrendous.
Just disgusting. So we have them, and obviously we're going to modify their diet. And thank heavens for our wonderful donors. We get donations from Aldi's and from Cub and from all kinds of Kowalski's. All these grocery stores donate things to help us feed these guys, so they get a natural diet. We do not feed them an unnatural diet. They get fruit and vegetables and things like that. So, and they get, I apologize if it's shocking to our listeners, but they do get deer fawns that are hit by cars. Deer fawns are a huge part of black bear diet. Huge. Black bears eat more deer fawns than wolves do in the springtime. And they're more, they're better at getting them. So, but they are, but these guys, I don't even know. It's so heartbreaking for these guys. So we're still trying to figure out how to get these guys comfortable here. They did not hibernate. They were so sad. But they're starting to get more comfortable and starting to like some of my staff. I have wonderful animal care staff. And so they're bringing them treats and things to try to warm their hearts. But,
good.
So, yeah.
Wow. Makes so me they just want to come up there and hug them, Piggy, you know?
You can't.
I do that, though.
I'm sorry, what?
I said it just makes me want to come up there and hug them, you know? I just don't know.
Trust me. These guys are adorable.
Oh, yes.
The male will never forgive me for anesthetizing him, so I feel so bad. I'm the bad guy. I'm like, I had to knock you out, honey. I couldn't get your 450-pound body into a crate if you were awake. So he's mad at me, and that's okay, because my animal care staff is just great, great women, and they end up loving my women. So.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Did you have a question, Heidi?
Well, no, I wanted to give Peggy a chance to talk about COVID and how that's affecting their livelihood right
Thank
now.
Thank you.
Yes, please
Thank
do.
You so much. So one of our huge missions is education, and I have this wonderful education director who is a licensed science teacher. So you guys know we're about science. We're about information that's sustainable. And so we teach science, technology, engineering, and math here, STEM programs. And immediately when the school shut down, our program shut down. We also teach colleges all across the country that have wildlife students how to deal when they're out in the field with wildlife. Those shut down. We had our wine tasting, which is a wonderful generator for excitement. And it's a typical Wildlife Science Center wine tasting. We have our snakes and our raptors and things. It's kind of a fun thing. That shut down. So in the next 3 months, we're looking at a $50,000 bam gone that we generate, that we don't ask for donations. And that's one of the things we try so hard. We know there are so many nonprofits out there that are taking care of human services that we try to generate our own revenue as much as we can. And you know what? I'm a human. I'm a mom. If I had to give my dollar, it would go to saving people. But I do need to say, we need a few of your dollars. We need to keep my staff here. Laying off people is not an option with this many animals. And we are bare bones. There is no fluff in this organization. We do the best we can. And so any dollar amount will help keep these guys going. Absolutely. So
good. And they can donate through your website?
Yeah, that was
absolutely. Our website has a donate button, and it also we also have you can purchase swag. So we have you can get to that also through our website. So and I'm really not trying to whine. We are better off than some people, but we do need help. We need to help, and I'm looking into other government organizations, things that we can do to help us out. But anyone that wants to help will be fantastic.
Awesome.
And it really matters.
Great. Well, that I posted the link on the chat room so that the people in the chat room can see that and click on it. But it's wildlifesciencecenter.org is the website.
Correct.
Okay, correct. Good. So if you can go there and spare a few dollars even, I know you guys would really appreciate it. So
yeah, and we'll put it on our Facebook page too, which,
thank you so much.
A lot of
thank
people
you so much.
That, so. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, awesome.
Perfect. Good. Well, yeah, we know that this is, it's hard for everybody, but, you know, the animals, you have a ton of animals, and you need the funds and the staff to take care of them, because that's your mission, you know, is to make sure that these animals are cared for. So, good.
Yep.
So are all of your staff, all of your care staff, are they all women?
Other than our education director, yes. All our animal care staff are women.
I love it. Girl power. Girl power.
Is that by design?
Yeah.
Or
oh,
did
my
it just,
gosh. I am,
did it just happen?
What?
Or was it by design?
No. You know, I got to say a little bit of both. What I have found is that, you know, you have to have physical strength. And it turns out people just decide women don't have physical strength. And I have never been that way because I had to be that way. And then you have to have compassion and pragmatism. So it's not just any woman that walks in the door. It's a rare combination of things. Mm-hmm. And again, I have to be honest. One of my animal care staff is my daughter. She was born by C-section, and I had a week and a half off from maternity leave, and I was on my 37th birthday, and I strapped her to my chest when I got back, and she's been here ever since. She's in online college, and she grew up doing this, and she's a badass, holy crap. She can deal with anything. And I have amazing women here, really. Mm-hmm. One of my curator, my lead curator, is a woman that started volunteering when she was 13 years old out here. She knew what she wanted. And that's the kind of person I have here. They know what they want, and that's it. And they chase it. And she had to work her butt off to get here. And so she went to Anoka Ramsey and power crammed college classes so that her University of Minnesota wildlife degree was shortened. And then she did a whole bunch of field work. She went to Yellowstone. She went to Northern Minnesota and worked on wolves and moose and all this stuff. And she came back and said, "This is what I want, Peg." Okay, girl, you are mine. So it's really cool. I got to be honest, I just love it. So
yeah,
very cool.
That is amazing, to say the least, for sure. Sherry in the chat room is asking, do the animals react better to women than to men? For
pretty
all
much.
Those reasons you just said, pretty much.
Again, my dog sanctuary. There is a definite general rule that and I apologize to the men out there, there is a certain socialization. Men feel a need to dominate, and women mm-hmm. don't. And you can dominate by kissing a dog on the nose. That's a dominant gesture, and people don't understand it. You don't have to stand over them and make them feel like they're going to be attacked. Mm-hmm. So I have dogs in my care that have ripped people's throats out, and they are submissive to me without me ever having to lay a hand on them. Mm-hmm. It is that way. And I think my husband accidentally was socialized that way. We have so many man haters that love him. He kind of wishes that one of them would like to kind of a little verification that he's a guy. But it is amazing. But with wolves, what's interesting is it's more complicated cascade of things. Voice pitch matters. And if you listen to wolves or dogs communicate, when they are greeting each other and saying, "Hey, how are you?" or calling my pups, it's a high-pitched whine. Oftentimes people misinterpret it as a cry. No, it's a call. Mm-hmm. They're calling their pups. So when I work with dogs, when I get orphan pups, I call them by whining to them, and it works beautifully. I call them by howling to them, and nothing else matters. I mean, never mind teaching them to come. You call, you howl, and everybody comes. So when you are lowering your voice, it's a growl, it's a discipline, it's correction. And men generally have lower voices, and mm-hmm. when they greet dogs, don't necessarily automatically hire their voices. It makes such a difference. And wow. My husband, because he lives with two women and is battered by them, he raises his voice. So, but it matters. Holy, holy buckets, mm-hmm. it matters.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Interesting.
Yeah.
And with wolves, everything is more exponentially important. So everything is more, when you're working with a hand-raised wolf, the likelihood of them turning on you is much higher. However, they are also far less willing to challenge you if they think they're going to lose. So it's all about your demeanor and all about situation and other pack members. So, and it happens, and then you just take it in stride. There's no physical fight. You just go, mm-hmm. okay, you're right. Mm-hmm. Yep. And then we're just going to react to you differently. We're going to manage you medically differently. But one of the reasons, just so your folks know, that we hand-raise wolves is because we have been working for many years with Duke University looking at cognition and all of the cool things that we know now about dogs, about how dogs secrete more oxytocin than people do when they're staring at each other, and domestication, and the studies that we're doing are literally fun games for puppies. And we take them, we bottle feed them so they'll play fun games, and then my daughter works with a Duke student, and they play fun games. And wolves don't play the same games that dogs do. They don't mm-hmm. make the same decisions. If you hide a piece of food under a cup for a wolf and then point at it, the wolf doesn't believe you. Mm-hmm. The dog does. As early as 6 weeks, they're like, "Oh, okay, you're telling me there's food here." The wolf doesn't believe you. There's nothing in their history that says, "I need to look to humans for a source of food." So it's just these subtle, subtle things that are so fascinating and contribute to our understanding of wolves and dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
That is so cool.
Interesting. Yeah,
so cool.
Right? So there's another question from the chat room. Karen is asking if you ever get away. Do you ever have time off?
God bless you. Are you willing to take care of stuff for me? No. I love you. Come and stay here.
Oh, my gosh. Karen has quite a pack of dogs on her own. She has five dogs up there. She lives up north of the, you know, she lives in the almost wilderness, the wilderness, I call it, up in northern Minnesota. So she lives with all the wolves, too.
God bless her.
There's a lot of wolves up there. Yes. And,
Yeah. Boy, I know all the work she has to take care of those five dogs, so I can only imagine 100 wolves and coyotes and bears and cougars and bobcats and birds of prey and, oh, my goodness, not to mention your dog rescue. So you are a busy woman, well, that's sure.
God bless her. And you know what? I have to be honest, I am blessed with a partner that buys it, and we are actually partners in it. And you know, when you get married, when you're kids, you say it's forever. Mm-hmm. You don't know that. And we are not the same people. And accidentally, we kind of rode this thing out and ended up sort of different people and still interested in the same road. And it's great. I mean, it's great. Mm-hmm. And we have a really cool daughter who we gave a voice to when she was tiny. And, they tell you as a parent not to negotiate with your kids. How can you not negotiate with a child that's going to be an adult? Give me a break.
No, you got to do it.
We negotiated with her and she has a mouth and she has a voice. And we appreciate it. And the three of us love spending time together. And we also on the side rescue horses, which,
oh my gosh,
is where it is.
Okay, so horses as well.
Wow.
That's
speechless.
Cool, though.
I love it. I absolutely love it. I love it, love it, love it. You are an amazing woman.
If you want to talk about a spirit animal, horses have rescued more people than... dogs rescue people all the time, but horses, the huge bodies, the huge love, it's a whole nother conversation.
Yeah.
So.
Yes, absolutely.
Agreed. So fascinating. So I'm wondering, because I don't know if it's like this, because you guys moved a couple years ago, didn't you? You moved to the location you're currently in. Yeah. And when I was there before, I told you that I brought a group there and we did the overnight camping in the middle of all these enclosures. We were camping and it was so magical. It was totally amazing. But when I remember being there, and I don't know if it's still like this, you don't have 100 wolves together, right? You have separate enclosures for some of them, or do they separate out and you have packs, or how does that work?
Absolutely. They're all separated. I mean, there's no way wolves would tolerate each other. So they're in family groups. And the difference is the enclosures are much larger. The space is much larger, but you still have the same experience. And as you can hear from the cacophony in the background, I think you'd have more trouble sleeping through it than you would have. Although it sounds like you didn't sleep through it.
Yeah.
The howling.
No. No. But yeah.
And it was your personal serenade, which is wonderful.
Yeah. I was telling you about that when we talked on the phone. I woke up early. It was like 5 o'clock in the morning. It was summer, so it was light out. Nobody was awake.
Yeah.
And so I went up to the platform with a book and my camping chair, and I just sat there to read because I wanted to hang out kind of by the wolves, because there were a few of them. I could see milling around. The rest of them, I don't know where they were. And one came over close to the fence line and just sat there and started howling. And they just started coming up and howling. And the whole clan of them, or whatever you call them, was just howling away. And I was just crying. It was so magical. It was like, oh my gosh, this is a personal serenade by this huge pack of wolves and nobody else is awake yet. I'm like, what is happening? People get up and see this. By the time everybody got up, they had stopped. And I was like, wow, I feel like the luckiest person on the planet right now. It was so cool.
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's
for
awesome.
Sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
So
best experience.
I just have to say, I don't understand why wolves speak to people, and especially women. They just do. And in honor of that, we have started an event. And again, God willing, we have no idea what's going to happen this year, but we have an event called Women and Wolves, and it is amazing. We have presentations from women that study wolves, and we have a tour, a bonfire, and a drum circle, and it is amazing. And this year we have a new building going up. In the face of COVID, we have a new building going up, and it's going to be a beautiful situation. So, you know, just keep an eye on things. None of us know what's going to happen, but we're not going to stop. We're just going to pause and care about each other like everyone else is, and this will go on, this will pass, and we'll go on. So, and you two have to come out here.
Oh, yes. Seriously. For sure. We are definitely doing a show.
Yeah, we're doing another Duke study this summer with wolf puppies, so we are obligated to bottle feed them so that they will have fun with games. And I'm telling you, you guys have to come out and help us.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh, yeah. That would be awesome.
Yeah.
That would be so cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sold.
And I'll keep 6 feet away from you.
I get to hold wolf puppies. I don't care.
Yeah, no, no.
Exactly.
Don't
right?
I don't care anymore.
And they say that the dogs don't transmit stuff, so wolves certainly don't.
Yep.
No.
And when you hold a wolf, you will see they don't smell like dogs. They absolutely don't. They do not have the oils. They smell like perfume, which makes sense. They smell like a very light. They don't stink. Of course not. Why would they stink if they go through the woods?
That's true.
It's very different.
Oh, that's I love it. Well, we have about 4 minutes left. So
okay. So here's what: would you like me to go over by the pens and howl?
Yeah,
you can get them to do it.
Do it. Yeah, for sure.
Oh gosh, yes, I can do it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
They can't shut up, so I'm gonna walk over here. So I am so grateful for you guys for thinking of us and including us. And I apologize on behalf of my shepherd that I have with me. He bit when he was 11 months old because he was treated poorly, but he is now the best wolf puppy nanny I have.
Aww.
He is amazing.
He loves
his wolf puppies. Yeah. His name is Poppy. And Star Tribune featured him last year caring for puppies. So, all right, I'm going to go over here by my favorite pack, and I'm going to just give us a howl. So.
Okay.
All right, here we go. Wait, this is a wolf. Oh my gosh.
Cool.
That is so cool.
That is just totally unbelievable.
Thank you. On a full moon, too. How
on
cool.
On a full moon.
Right?
What a awesome. Great way to honor the full moon, I think, tonight. Hey, this is awesome.
I think so, too.
And the wolves.
And the wolves.
And the wolves. Absolutely.
And the bears. And
if anybody wonders, the animals that are here would not be alive if they weren't. So yeah, that's the reality. They're here because it's either death or here. And they have fun. Come and see them. They have fun.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, for sure. So. Most
right.
definitely.
We have to wrap up.
Peggy, quickly. Thank you so much. Right, well,
thank you.
Thank you so much, ladies. It was really fun.
Oh,
this was awesome.
So fun. Thank you so much.
All right. Take care. We'll be in touch.
Definitely. Yes, for sure. Thank you. And everybody listening, thank you for tuning in. You got serenaded by wolves tonight,
that's
right?
That's right. Magical full moon event. Oh, my gosh. Awesome sauce.
Perfect.
So we want to thank Peggy and the Wildlife Science Center here in Minnesota. And thank all of you for listening, for sure. Yeah. And we will have the web address up on our Facebook page as well for this organization. And thanks to ParaX.
Yeah, thanks, ParaX, for hosting us. Sarge, our most awesome producer. Everybody that's listening, everybody in the chat room, thank you so much for being here tonight. Any troops that are out there, veterans, military folks and families, anybody affected by COVID-19, everybody take care and be safe out there. We're thinking about you. Big hugs to everybody.
Yes.
Have a great week, everybody. Good night.
See you next week. Night.